original text, but had a different word there, a word that meant anger. Moved with anger, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said, "I do choose. Be made clean." If you take the reports about the life-threatening shortage of methotrexate at face value, that's the drug that has saved the lives of countless children diagnosed with a fatal form of leukemia. If you take the reports about the shortage of that drug at face value, you will think the problem involves a faulty manufacturing mechanism. You may even think that this is an unavoidable glitch, an unfortunate technical problem. You may think this, of course, as you look at your healthy children. Knock on wood. As you turn the page on a crisis that may cause someone else's child in the United States to begin dying within a week or two for want of an injection in his spine. But if you begin to route around below the surface of official statements, you come to an incredible article in the New England Journal of Medicine. It was posted on November 3rd, 2011. For the first time in the United States, it begins, some essential chemotherapy drugs are in short supply. Most are generic drugs that have been used for years in childhood leukemia and curable cancers. Skipping down one paragraph, you come to the rub. The main cause of drug shortages is economic. If manufacturers don't make enough profit, they won't make generic drugs. So when a brand name drug is approved, even though it may be no more effective than the generic, production of the generic slows in favor of the brand name, which in one case cited, and I can't pronounce it, I should ask many of you who would know right away, levolucavorin is 58 times as expensive as the generic. No doubt the cost of one drug underwrites the discovery of another, and the advertising for yet another. I know this. I know those of you who work for drug companies in this congregation actually are among my tithers. This is the market, though, at work, the story behind the headlines. The article goes on to cite a second cause that concerns the way oncologists are reimbursed. When reimbursements for drugs dropped from 95% of the average wholesale price to 6% in 2003, the article claims that this caused oncologists to drop generic drugs in favor of name brands. Quote, "Why use the generic and receive 6% of $312 when you can use the brand name for 6% of $5,824? The response of oncologists responding to the article begs to differ, but I can only profess to know enough that we are in the eye of a perfect storm. The fact is, with the most expensive healthcare system in the world, we are becoming one of the least healthy nations on the planet. The outrage at so-called Obamacare on one side of the political spectrum is met on the other by outrage at reform which still forces the young, the old, and the working poor to choose between food pharmaceuticals. the gospel which begins with Jesus and has him as its substance is preached, said James Luther Mays a week ago. There the Son of God and the reign of God is present. Moreover, the speech that has Jesus as its substance is the demand and chance for men and women to live as though God were sovereign over the course of their days, because God is. How then might we hear the demand and take the chance to live as though God were sovereign over the order of our common life? As we have considered this question personally last week, now we must consider the question corporately and politically, as promised. We do this through the lens of Scripture. First, a bit of background is necessary if we are to notice the politically disruptive enactment of God's reign in what appears, on the surface, to be just one more story of Jesus healing a sick man at the end of Mark's first chapter. In ancient Israel, the religious community had charge of the healthcare system. Read the 13th and 14th of Leviticus before you go to bed tonight. It will probably put you to sleep, so that's a kind of double-edged recommendation. There you will be given a detailed glimpse into the response of a community confronted with contagion. Apparently, priests were the ancient diagnosticians who would determine after careful and prolonged observation that an eruption on the skin was indeed leprosy. Once diagnosed, the only reasonable thing to do, as Diane said, was to banish the person from the community lest others be afflicted. The leper, once diagnosed, was to tear his cloak, to dishevel his hair, to yell as people come by him, unclean, unclean, in other words, stay away from me. But ultimately, that person, says Leviticus, shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Though if it should happen, as clearly it did, that the disease runs its course, and the person appears to be healed, then an elaborate system of sacrifices and rituals kicks in, to the end that the person may be admitted back into the camp. There is shaving of all the hair, washing of every bit of clothes and skin over and over again, and finally the burning of any clothing. Then the one who desires to return to society brings guilt offerings. You've heard the offering that Naaman brought to the king of Israel. The person brings guilt offerings and a log of expensive oil to be elevated to the Lord. Blood, then, is put on the lobe of the right ear and on the thumb of the right hand and on the big toe of the right foot. Seriously, where do people come up with this stuff? Anyway, all of this is to make atonement for the person whose leprosy, said religion, was more than just a disease. It was a sign of another sickness called sin. The parallels to our time are almost too obvious to draw. Why am I telling you this? Because in the next paragraph of Leviticus, I could not believe what I read. Quote, but if the leper is poor and cannot afford so much. Really? Apparently, ancient Israel understood the need for universal health care. The poor man had only to come with one-tenth the amount of offering in order to be cleansed and admitted back into the society. When Jesus tells the leper to go, show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them, he surely was was moved by pity. Pity often is our helpless human response to a debilitating illness or disease that has afflicted another's life and livelihood. But the word, in fact, in probably the more original text, is the word for anger. Jesus was moved by anger. Anger, as we are about to see, directed against the systems that thwart what God is doing in the world to make and keep human life human. In the first place, then, when God's reign comes up against whatever dehumanizes the most vulnerable in a society, pity will not do. Anger and outrage are the only faithful responses. The second clue to Mark's meaning is given in the leper's words. He knows that a different sort of power has come close to him in the person of Jesus. He does not say, if you can, but if you choose, you can make me clean. He believes himself to be in the presence of a man who has the power to declare him clean. Lights should go on in the heads of anyone who has read Leviticus, as you all have. This man has ventured out of his isolation because the leprosy is already gone. He is ready to be pronounced clean by a priest. And he comes with no offering to cover the cost of his readmission to society. Rather, he comes to Jesus as one who trembles before God's freedom, if you choose, and who trusts completely in God's power. You can make me clean. We would do well to do the same in the second place, if we are to hear the demand and take the chance to live as though God's reign has come near. The third clue is in Jesus' action. In defiance of the Torah's sophisticated understanding of contagion, and assuming the priestly prerogative, Jesus touches this man who has not yet been declared clean. These are all about purity laws. I imagine the disciples were horrified. According to religion, the cost of the leper's cleanliness has become Jesus' contamination. I do choose, Jesus declares. Be made clean. What was only to be had for a price is bestowed freely by him who has paid the price with his own flesh. This is the grace that claims any who seek to follow him, that seek to live in the lively, reckless abandon of God's reign come near. But what is to be made of the meaning of Jesus' final command to the leper? Snorting with indignation, he says, go and show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them. Most English translations give the impression that Jesus instructed the leper to abide by the priestly ritual. So says Quaker scholar Chad Myers. This, however, misses the point of the story and its tone as well. Jesus' command is a command that actually sends the man back to the priest, implying that the man's position is to be, that man's petition to be declared clean had previously been rejected. He is to make the offering prescribed for cleansing, said Jesus, not as a testimony to them, but as a witness against them. Jesus' anger, his anger against the system that subjects the physically ailing, the outcast, to a double oppression, says Myers. Not only are they second-class citizens in Israel, but they must make special payment as well. Remember the provision I took to be an enlightened statute in ancient Israel concerning the health and restoration of the poor to full humanity in the community? In the light of God's reign, Jesus exposes it for what it is. The health care establishment, in this case, the priests and the temple, exacting from those who are least able to pay up, a price for the gift that is God's restoration of their health and humanity. No doubt the man is returned empty-handed and healthy to an audience that likely will be hostile. I have no doubt that we are that audience. For the most part, we are the community that benefits from the society as it has been ordered. God knows we are not the 1%. Or if you are, you've certainly fooled me at stewardship time. But neither are most in this crowd, including this priest, among the number who must decide whether to feed our child or buy her the medicine that will keep her from getting sicker. Can we not hear in this story the demand and chance to live as though God were sovereign over our common life? If God's reign has come close in him who declared the leper to be clean and sent him to the healthcare system of his day as a witness against those who benefit from the system, then surely what God is doing in the world to make and keep human life human has something to do with sending us into the world as a community angry that human health and well-being belongs to those who can earn enough to afford them. Viewed from within the reign of God, health and wholeness is a gift of God to the Naamans who have everything and to the lepers who are nameless, a gift of the God who is making and keeping human life human. We thwart God's will when we order our common life such that health and wholeness increasingly become the possession of those who can pay for them. You can believe that out there, but I think it's really hard to believe that in here. Our common life, if you want to take it from the perspective of self-interest, our common life is diminished. Diminished not by the sin of the sick, but by the sickness and sin at the heart of a society bent on keeping the most vulnerable outside the camp, keeping the sick and the poor out of sight until it should happen. God forbid that our child dies because the profit margin does not warrant saving her life. Jesus tells the leper to see that he says nothing to anyone. But the leper could not keep silent. I pray that this community will hear the demand and take the chance to do as the leper did, to tremble before God's freedom, to trust completely in God's power, to oppose every system that thwarts God's will, and thereby to bear witness to the God who is in the world, making and keeping human life human. Thanks be to God.